Chapter 3. The Dual Robbery at the Grand Metropolitan. "Poirot," I said, "a change of air will do you good." "Do you think so, my friend?" "I am sure of it. Will you come?" "Where will you take me?" "To Brighton. I think a weekend at the Grand Metropolitan Hotel will do us good." "Thank you, I accept. You think of an old man like me. You have a good heart, and having a good heart is better than having the little grey cells of a brain." I did not like his comment very much. Sometimes Poirot does not understand my abilities. On Saturday evening, we went dining at the Grand Metropolitan. It was crowded and cheerful. People were wearing wonderful dresses and magnificent jewels. "How wonderful," said Poirot. He looked around carefully. "Seeing so many jewels makes me wish I had been a criminal and not a detective. This is a great chance for theft. Look, Hastings, that big woman standing by the pillar. She is covered in jewels." I looked at the woman. "Oh," I exclaimed, "it's Mrs. Opelson." "You know her?" "A little. Her husband is a rich stockbroker. He made a fortune in the recent oil boom." After dinner, we met the Opelsons, and I introduced Poirot to them. We chatted for a few minutes and then had coffee together. Poirot admired the gems on the lady's neck. "It's my hobby, Monsieur Poirot. I just love jewellery. Ed knows my weakness, and he frequently buys me something new. Are you interested in precious stones?" "I have dealt with them in the past, madame. I have seen some of the most famous jewels in the world because of my profession." He told them the story of the historic jewels of a royal family, and Mrs. Opelson listened with interest. "Wonderful!" she exclaimed as he ended. "You know I've got some pearls that have a history. I believe it's one of the finest necklaces in the world. The pearls are beautifully matched and perfect in colour. I must run upstairs and get it now." "Oh, madame, you are very kind," said Poirot. "But please do not go." "Oh, but I'd like to show it to you." She went to the lift. Her husband, who had been talking to me, looked at Poirot. "Your wife is kind enough to show me her pearl necklace," Poirot explained. "Oh, the pearls," Opelson smiled. "Well, they are worth seeing. They cost a lot of money too. But I could still get back the money I paid them any day, perhaps more. I may have to sell them if things go bad. Money is tight in London." He continued talking about technical things that I did not understand. Then a page boy came and said something in his ear. "What? I'll come at once." "She's not ill, is she?" "Excuse me, gentlemen." He left us. Poirot leaned back on his chair. Then carefully, he arranged the empty coffee cups in a row. He looked at them happily. Time passed. The Opelsons did not return. "Strange," I said finally. "When will they come back?" "They will not come back," said Poirot. "Why?" "Because, my friend, something has happened."
"What?
How do you know?" I asked. Poirot smiled. "A few moments ago, the manager came out of his office and ran upstairs. He looked very nervous. The lift boy is talking with one of the page boys. The waiters are talking to each other. It must be a very important problem." "Ah, just like I thought. Here come the police." Two men had just entered the hotel, one in uniform, the other in plain clothes. They spoke to a page boy and were taken upstairs. A few minutes later, the boy came up to us. "Mr. Opelson would like to see you upstairs." Poirot jumped to his feet. I followed. The Opelsons' rooms were on the first floor. We knocked on the door and went in. The room was Mrs. Opelson's bedroom. She was lying in an armchair, crying. Mr. Opelson was walking up and down the room angrily. The two police officers stood in the middle of the room, one with a notebook in hand. A hotel chambermaid stood by the fireplace. She looked frightened. On the other side of the room, a French woman, Mrs. Opelson's maid, was also crying. Poirot went in. Immediately Mrs. Opelson jumped up from her chair and went towards him. Monsieur Poirot, I believe in luck. It was fate that made us meet this evening. Only you can get my pearls back from me. Calm yourself, please, madam. Poirot patted her hand. All will be well. Hercule Poirot will help you. Mr. Opelson turned to the police inspector. Is it all right if this gentleman makes an investigation? Yes, sir, replied the man. Now that Mrs. Opelson is feeling better, perhaps she can tell us what happened. Mrs. Opelson looked helplessly at Poirot. Sit down, madam, and tell us the whole story. Mrs. Opelson dried her eyes and began. I came upstairs after dinner to fetch my pearls for Mr. Poirot to see. The chambermaid and my maid Celestine were both in the room as usual. What do you mean by as usual, madam? Mr. Opelson explained. It is my rule. No one can come into this room unless Celestine, the maid, is here also. The chambermaid cleans the room in the morning while Celestine is here, and she comes in after dinner to prepare the beds while Celestine is here. Mrs. Opelson continued. Well, I came up. I went to the drawer here. She pointed at the bottom right-hand drawer of the dressing table. I took out my jewel case and unlocked it, but the pearls were not there. The inspector had been busy with his notebook. When had you last seen them? He asked. They were there when I went down to dinner this evening. Are you sure? Yes. I could not decide whether to wear them. In the end, I decided to wear the emeralds and put the pearls back in the jewel case. Who locked up the jewel case? I did. I wear the key on a chain round my neck. She showed the key to us. The inspector examined it. The thief must have had an identical key. It was easy. The lock is quite a simple one. What did you do after you locked the jewel case? I put it back in the bottom drawer. You didn't lock the drawer? No, I never do. My maid stays in the room until I come back, so there's no need. So the jewels were there when you went down to dinner, and since then the maid has not left the room? Suddenly, Celestine screamed out loud. She had just realized her own situation for the first time. She threw herself on Poirot and spoke in French. This is an evil suggestion. Me robbing Madame? The police are well known to be very stupid. But Monsieur, you are a Frenchman. A Belgian, corrected Poirot. But she did not seem to listen. Monsieur will not watch me get accused falsely. And that terrible chambermaid is allowed to go free? I've never liked her. She's a thief. She's not honest. I've always kept a sharp watch over her when she was doing Madame's room. The idiot policeman should search her. I'm sure they will find the pearls on her. These words were said in French. But the chambermaid realized at least some of their meaning. She reddened angrily. If that foreign woman is saying that I took the pearls, it's a lie, she said. I didn't even see them. Search her, screamed Celestine. You will find it. You're a liar, do you hear? Said the chambermaid, walking towards her. You stole them yourself. I was in the room only 3 minutes before the lady came up. You were sitting here the whole time, as you always do. Like a cat watching a mouse. The inspector looked at Celestine. Is that true? Didn't you leave the room at all? I did not actually leave her alone, said Celestine. But I went into my own room through this door twice. Once I went to fetch some cotton and once I went for my scissors. She must have done it then. You weren't gone a minute, shouted the chambermaid. You went out and in again. I'd be glad if the police searched me. I have nothing to be afraid of. At this moment, there was a knock on the door. The inspector went to it. Ah, he said. I asked for one of our female searchers, and she has arrived. Please go into the room next door. He looked at the chambermaid. She walked to the next room, while the searcher followed her closely. The French girl was crying in a chair. Poirot was looking round the room. I made a sketch of the main features of the room. Where does that door lead? He asked, pointing to the one by the window. Into the next apartment, I believe, said the inspector. It's locked on this side. Poirot walked across to it and tried the door. He unlocked the bolt and tried it again. It is also locked on the other side, he said. He walked over to the windows, examining each of them in turn. And again, nothing here. There is no balcony outside. Even if there were a balcony, said the inspector, I don't see how that would help us. The maid never left the room. Obviously, said Poirot. Mademoiselle is certain that she did not leave the room. He was interrupted by the chambermaid and the police searcher who had returned to the room. Nothing, said the searcher. Of course, said the chambermaid. And that French girl should be ashamed of herself for blaming an honest girl. All right, my girl, said the inspector, opening the door. Nobody suspects you. You go and get on with your work. The chambermaid went to the door. Are you going to search her? She asked, pointing at Celestine. Yes, yes. He shut the door and turned the key. Celestine now followed the searcher into the small room. A few minutes later, she returned. Nothing had been found on her. The inspector's face grew more serious. I'm afraid you have to come with me to the police station, miss. He turned to Mrs. Opelson. I'm sorry, madam, but all the evidence points that way. If she's not got them on her, they're hidden somewhere in the room. Celestine yelled with panic and held Poirot's arm. He bent and whispered something in the girl's ear. She looked up at him doubtfully. Yes, yes, my child. It is better not to resist. Then he turned to the inspector. I would like to make a little experiment. Do you permit, monsieur? What is it? Asked the police officer. Poirot turned to Celestine again. You have told us that you went into your room to fetch some cotton. Where was it? On the top of the chest of drawers, monsieur. And the scissors? There were there also. Could you please repeat those actions, mademoiselle? You were sitting here. Celestine sat down, and then, at a sign from Poirot, she stood up and went to the next room. She took up an object from the chest of drawers and returned. Poirot was watching her movements with a watch in his hand. Do it again, please, mademoiselle. She repeated the movements. He made a note in his pocketbook and put the watch back into his pocket. Thank you, mademoiselle. He turned to the inspector. And thank you, monsieur. Celestine left the room crying, followed by the searcher woman and the plainclothes official. Then the inspector apologized to Mrs. Opelson and began to search the room. He pulled out drawers, opened cupboards, completely unmade the bed, and tapped the floor. Mr. Opelson looked on doubtfully. Do you really think you will find them? He asked. Yes, sir, the inspector said. She didn't have enough time to take them out of the room. The pearls must be here. One of the two must have hidden them. It's very unlikely for the chambermaid to have done it. More than unlikely. It's impossible, said Poirot quietly. What? The inspector looked at him. Poirot smiled. I will show you. Hastings, my good friend, take my watch in your hand. Be careful, it is very valuable. I timed Mademoiselle's movements. The first time she went, it took 12 seconds. The second time, it took 15 seconds. Now watch my actions. He turned to Mrs. Opelson. Madame, may I have the key of the jewel case? I thank you. He turned to me again. Hastings, please say go. Go, I said. Very quickly, Poirot opened the drawer of the dressing table, took out the jewel case, fitted the key in the lock, opened the case, selected a piece of jewellery, shut and locked the case, and returned it to the drawer and closed it. His movements were as fast as lightning. Well, my friend, he asked me breathlessly. 46 seconds, I replied. You see, there would have been no time for the chambermaid to take the necklace out. It would be impossible for her to hide it. Then it must be the maid, said the inspector, and continued to search the room. He went into the maid's bedroom next door. Poirot was thinking. Suddenly he turned to Mr. Opelson. This necklace, was it insured? Mr. Opelson looked a little surprised at the question. Yes, he said. But what does that matter? Said Mrs. Opelson. I want my necklace. It was unique. No money could buy it. I understand, madame, said Poirot. But it is comforting for monsieur to know that it was insured. Of course, said Mr. Opelson. Suddenly, the inspector gave out a shout. He came back with something in his fingers. Mrs. Opelson cried out loud and threw herself up from her chair. Oh, oh, my necklace! She held it with both hands. We crowded around her. Where was it? Asked Opelson. Under the maid's bed. She must have stolen it and hidden it there before the chambermaid arrived. May I, madam? Asked Poirot gently. He took the necklace from her and examined it closely. Then he handed it back. I'm afraid, madam, we will have to keep the necklace, said the inspector. But it will be returned to you as soon as possible. Mr. Opelson frowned. Is that necessary? I'm afraid so, sir. Oh, let him take it, Ed, cried his wife. I'd feel safer if he did. That wicked girl, I never expected it from her. I felt a hand on my arm. It was Poirot. Let's go, my friend. I think we are no longer needed here. We went outside, but he stopped. I would like to see the room next door, he said. The door was not locked, and we entered. It was a large, unused room. Poirot touched a dressing table near the window. There was dust on it. He looked out of the window thoughtfully. Well, I said impatiently, why did we come in here? He stared. Pardon me, my friend. I wanted to see if the door was really locked on this side also. Well, I said. I looked at the door which led to the room we had just left. It is locked. Poirot nodded his head. He was still thinking. And what does it matter? I asked. The case is over. That idiot inspector solved it. Poirot shook his head. The case is not over, my friend. We must find out who stole the pearls. But the maid did. Why do you say that? Well, they were found in her mattress. No, 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 said Poirot impatiently. Those were not the pearls. What? Imitation, my friend. I was shocked. Poirot was smiling. The inspector knows nothing about jewels. Come, I cried, pulling at his arm. We must tell the Opelsons at once. I don't think so. But that poor woman. Well, she will have a better night believing the jewels are safe. But the thief may escape with them. My friend, you speak without thinking. How do you know that the pearls Mrs. Opelson locked up so carefully tonight were not the false ones? Perhaps the real robbery took place a long time ago. Oh, I said, I was puzzled. Yes, said Poirot, smiling. We start again. He went out of the room, stopped for a moment, and then walked down to the end of the corridor. He stopped outside a small room that the chambermaids and valets used. Mrs. Opelson's chambermaid was telling the others about what had happened. She stopped in the middle of a sentence when she saw Poirot. Excuse me for interrupting, but could you please unlock the door of Mr. Opelson's room for me? He asked. The woman stood up. We walked down the passage again. Mr. Opelson's room was on the other side of the corridor. Its door faced the door of his wife's room. The chambermaid unlocked it, and we entered. Poirot showed her a card. Have you ever seen a card like this among Mr. Opelson's belongings? It was a plain white card, shiny and unusual in appearance. The maid took it and looked at it carefully. No, sir, I haven't, she said. But the valet may know. He takes care of the gentleman's rooms. I see. Thank you. Poirot took back the card. The woman left. Poirot was thinking. Then he nodded his head. Please ring the bell, Hastings, he said. Three times for the valet. I did. Poirot emptied the waste paper basket on the floor. He looked carefully at some pieces of torn paper. A few moments later, the valet came. Poirot showed him the card and asked him about it. But the valet had never seen it among Mr. Opelson's belongings. Poirot thanked him, and he left. Poirot put the torn paper back into the basket. And the necklace was heavily insured, he said. Let us return to our own rooms. We went in silence. When we were at our rooms, Poirot quickly changed his clothes. I must go to London tonight, he said. What? I must. I have solved the crime in my head. Now I must go to London to find proof. And I will find it. It is impossible to trick Hercule Poirot. You'll fail one day, I said. Do not be angry, my friend. I rely on you for your help. Of course, I said. What is it? Will you brush the sleeve of my coat that I have taken off? There is a little white powder on it. I ran my finger round the jaw of the dressing table. I obtained the powder on my finger. But what was the powder? I asked. Not poison, said Poirot, smiling. It was French chalk. French chalk? Yes. Furniture makers use it to make drawers slide easily. I laughed. I thought you had discovered something exciting. Goodbye, my friend. I have to go. The next morning, I heard nothing from Poirot. So I went out for a walk, met some old friends, and had lunch with them. In the afternoon, we went for a drive. It was past 8 when I got back to the Grand Metropolitan. I saw Poirot talking to the Opelsons, smiling happily. My friend Hastings, he cried. I have solved it. Do you mean? It's wonderful, said Mrs. Opelson, smiling. Didn't I tell you, Ed, that only Mr. Poirot could get back my pearls? You did, my dear, and you were right. I looked at Poirot, and he answered. My friend Hastings is confused. Sit down, my friend, and I will tell you everything. They are arrested. Who are arrested? The chambermaid and the valet, of course. You did not suspect? I told you about the French talk. You said furniture makers used it. Yes, they do, to make drawers slide easily. Somebody wanted that drawer to slide in and out without any noise. Who could that be? It could only be the chambermaid. It was a very clever plan. Then he explained it all to me. This was how it was done. The valet is in the empty room next door, waiting. The French maid Celestine leaves the room. Very quickly, the chambermaid opens the drawer and takes out the jewel case. Then she unlocks the door and puts the jewel case between the two doors. The valet, who is in the other room, opens the door with his own key and takes the necklace out of the jewel case. When Celestine leaves the room again, the chambermaid opens the door, takes the case, and puts it back into the drawer. And then? And then Mrs. Opelson arrives and discovers the theft. The imitation necklace that they have hidden in the French girl's bed that morning is found by the police. But why did you go to London? Do you remember the card? Yes, it puzzled me. Poirot laughed. It was a trick. The card had a specially prepared surface. I used it to get the chambermaid and the valet's fingerprints. Then I went to Scotland Yard and gave the card to our old friend Inspector Jabb. The fingerprints proved that they were two well-known jewel thieves. Jabb came back here with me, the thieves were arrested, and the necklace was discovered in the valet's room. They were clever, but they made a mistake. What was their mistake? I asked. My friend, if you pretend to be a chambermaid or valet, you should do a good job. They did not clean the empty room. When the man put down the jewel case on the little table near the door, it left a square mark. There was a moment's silence. And I've got my pearls, said Mrs. Opelson. Well, I said, I'd like to have dinner now. Poirot and I went to dinner.